This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
Chanukah. The Greeks come and oppress the Jewish people. The Jews fight back. When they get to the temple, they find oil sufficient for a day, and instead it burns for 8 days. We know the story, and we know the foods associated with Chanukah. Either latkes, potato cakes, or if you're in Israel, sufganiyot, donuts. But the truth of the matter is that Chanukah is far, far more subtle and complicated than what we're often taught. And even the foods, it's not clear that the food is really latkes and sufganiyot. So what we're going to do today is we're going to try and understand the Chanukah story a little bit more in depth. And as educators, I hope that I'm going to guide you in making the difficult decision of how you choose to present the holiday. And even if you don't present it in its entire spectrum, it's very, very important for us as the givers of the knowledge to know what the different opinions are. So saying that the food isn't really latke or sufganiyot was partly a joke, but it is true that in fact there's a custom to eat milky foods on Chanukah, similar to Shavuot. But I would like to claim that the real food, the real Chanukah food, is tofu. And I'm going to share with you why. There are many, many different accounts of the story of Chanukah. Today we're going to look at 4 of them. From the book of Maccabees, which was written close to the time. The Al HaNisim prayer, which is what is read in shul as part of services. We're going to look at how the Talmud thinks of Chanukah, and we're also going to look at the Rambam, Maimonides' view of it. If you listen carefully, you will see that there are many, many differences between these accounts when it comes to issues as God. What is God's role? Who is God? How much power does God have? In terms of war, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? Who are the Greeks and who are the Hasmoneans? In terms of miracles, was there a miracle? And if there was a miracle, what was that miracle? And questions about purity and religiosity, each of them are very, very different. If you look at the book of Maccabees, which, as I said, was written closest to the time, and if you want to download the source sheet, it's the first one that you have in front of you. We read that the Jewish people rose up in the morning, they offered a sacrifice, and they dedicated the temple with songs, cithens, whatever that might be, harps and cymbals. In this version of the story, there is no miracle of oil. What happened was that Sukkot had not been kept that year, and when the temple was taken back again, the rabbis decided that they would keep Sukkot late that year. So you have 7 days of Sukkot, plus Shmini Atzeret at the end, 8 days altogether, and according to this story, that is where the 8 days of Chanukah come from. It's a fairly nationalistic telling of the tale, where what is important is the fact that the Jewish people beat down the Greeks. There is an emphasis on celebration, less emphasis on light and more on celebration. When we come to Al HaNisim, which was written later, we see a different version of the story. We read about the Greek kingdom that rose up against your people to make them forget your Torah. It's a very, actually, rather amusingly written in a way. The way that this prayer is written, it's like the Jewish people speaking to God and saying to God, oh, by the way, do you remember you did this? It's almost, you know, like an overactive assistant telling the boss what the boss has told them. It says, compel them to stray. You stood up for them. You took their grievance. You judged their claim. You delivered the strong into the weak, the many into the pure, the few, the impure into the hands of the pure. What's fascinating about this, and we could read more, is we have a miracle in this story, but it's not a miracle of light. In this story, the miracle is that God helped the people who were rising up against the Greeks. There's a lot of emphasis on purity. It reminds me a little bit of an incident during the Israeli War of Independence in 1948, when Tzfat, Safed, the town up north, it was very, very unclear whether the Palmach, whether the army was actually going to decide to keep it or not. Ben-Gurion wanted to keep it. The other people didn't want to. And they asked the chief rabbi of Tzfat, what do you think will happen? And he said, well, either we'll do what we always do. We'll say Tehillim, Psalms, and God will save us by natural means. Or, he said, a real miracle will happen and the Haganah and the Palmach will come and save us. And that is sort of what Al HaNisim is saying. The real miracle is that God gave people the strength to rise. There is kindling, there is purity, but it isn't very emphasized. What's also not emphasized is the Hasmoneans, because the Hasmoneans, the Hashmonaim, very, very soon became corrupt, and therefore this prayer and the next piece we're going to look at from the Talmud have a tendency to downplay the role of the Hasmoneans, because the Hasmoneans very quickly became abusive of their power. And while the book of Maccabees lauds what they did, this prayer and the Talmud plays down what they did. In the Talmud, the story of Chanukah is found in a very strange place. We would expect it to be somewhere to do with holidays or maybe somewhere to do with miracles. But instead, it's a side comment on the laws of Shabbat. It says, what happened on Chanukah? The rabbis taught that we're not allowed to mourn and fast that day. Why? When the Greeks entered the temple, they defiled the oil, and the Hasmoneans came, they vanquished them. There was only a single cruse of oil. It was enough oil for the needs of a single day. A miracle was wrought, and it burnt 8 days. The next year, they ordained these a holiday with songs and praise. Here we have a very, very different story going on. The heroes here are not the Hasmoneans, not the fighters, but the rabbis, their authority. What is important is religious rules. When we speak about the Greeks, we don't speak about a band of Greeks or certain types of Greeks. It's all the Greeks. They're all bad. The Hasmoneans are mentioned, as is the war, but the real miracle is of the oil and the purity, and the hero is the high priest. A very, very different story, perhaps one more used to the one that we're used to, but we see how radical it is when compared to the previous two. Just a little historical background before we go to the Rambam, because it's going to be important for us, both for the Rambam and what we discussed afterwards. And that is, historians tell us that it wasn't quite the Jewish people versus the Greeks. From a historical viewpoint, what really happened, it was a battle between Jews who were more Hellenized and believed more in bringing Greek customs into their own lives versus Jews who were very adamantly opposed to any type of Hellenism and wanted to retreat inwards. And historically, the battle was less between Jews and Greeks and more between two different kinds of Jews. And when we look at it from this lens, we can understand the Rambam and also later understandings in a far better way. The Rambam tries as hard as he can, as is his wont, to include everything in. The miracles, the war, the God, the purity. But nevertheless, his own ideas come out. For example, if you look at the last piece you have during the period of the Second Temple, the Greek kings issued harsh decrees. It's no longer, is it all the Greeks? It's the Greek kings. And the Rambam, Maimonides, is very emotionally invested in it not being all the Greeks. The Rambam loves Plato. The Rambam loves Aristotle. He sees these as the highest thought that has ever come into the world. The last thing he wants is to speak of all the Greeks as being awful people. No, it wasn't all the Greeks. The Greeks were good people. It was just the kings who outlawed religion, forbade them to engage in Torah and practice mitzvot, lays hands upon their money, entered the sanctuary, ravaged it, and defiled all that had been richly pure. Like the Gemara, the Rambam is seeing things in very religious terms. And like the prayer, Al HaNisim, it says, till the God of our fathers granted them mercy and delivered them from the hands of their enemies, there is a miracle, but it's a miracle of war. And then people take over. The Hashmonai Kohanim Gdolim prevailed, killed them, and delivered Israel from their hands. They designated a king from among the Kohanim, and the kingdom of Israel was restored for more than 200 years. till the second destruction, nothing about them being corrupt. He doesn't try and play down the Hashmonaim, because the Rambam, even though he's sitting in Spain or Egypt, is dreaming of the time of the Messiah. He has an entire section in his book called Hilchot Melachim, the Laws of Kings, which tell us what things are going to be like when there's a restored Jewish state. So for him, he wants the Hashmonaim to be the example of what happens when Jews rule their own country. Finally, we read about Israel prevailing, vanquishing them, finding only one jar of oil, which burned for 8 days. But fascinatingly, the Rambam finishes off, till they pressed olives and extracted pure oil. The miracle was for 8 days, but then people went along and did what they wanted to do. For the Rambam, what people do with their own hands and their own heads, this is more important than the greatest of miracles. So we have four very, very different stories. Stories of a military victory. Stories of a military victory done by God. A story about the miracle of oil. And a story about God and people working together to bring about a new situation. Nowadays, different people have picked up on the themes that we've spoken about as well. Some people see Hanukkah as the holiday of religious freedom, where people fought for the ability to practice their Judaism in their own way. Historically, this may not be accurate, but this resonates very strongly with a lot of people. Some people have seen it as the anti-assimilation holiday. We're not going to let you make us like you. We're going to remain who we are. In modern Israel, Hanukkah very, very often became the symbol of the holiday, of the might of human beings being able to fight against their oppressors. And in recent years, very, very interesting strains have been heard where people have said, you know, we empathize and identify more with the Mityavnim, with the Hellenizers, who say the Hashmonaim were the fundamentalists of their days. They were trying to beat everybody who thought differently from them. And for them, many people have said, rather radically in my mind, we emphasize with the Mityavnim, and for us, Hanukkah should be the anti-fundamentalism holiday. I would like to suggest two ideas of my own. One is that I think a way to conceptualize Hanukkah as educators and as Jews and as people for modern people is to ask a different question. And that is, what is sufficiently important to you for you to fight for? It doesn't have to be extreme in the sense of putting your life down, although sadly, wherever we are in the world, that sometimes happens. But what is important enough for you to set aside your comfort? What is important enough for you to go against the grain? I think this is an idea that, regardless of which version of the Hanukkah story you identify with, is something that can speak to us. And secondly, I would like to suggest that Hanukkah is indeed the tofu holiday. Tofu is bean curd. It takes on the taste of whatever it's cooked in. And I think Hanukkah is a perfect example of a Jewish custom and a Jewish ritual which can take on and absorb all the values that are around it. It's a little ironic that for some, Hanukkah is the symbol of not including the other, whereas what I would like to claim is Hanukkah is a wonderful blank slate, a wonderful piece of tofu on which we bring our various ideas. As educators, our job is not just to teach the past, to teach the present, and to teach the future, but also to train ourselves and others with the tools and the discernment to be able to look at the tradition and understand it in one's own way. I wish you all luck, and I'm always around for questions, comments, and ideas.
This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.